This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Dr. Janice Jackson, the chief executive officer of the Chicago Public Schools, the third largest public school district in the United States with 370,000 students. Dr. Jackson was introduced by Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who criticized Governor Rauner's veto of the licensing of gun shop bill today. The mayor said this is 100% wrong for the city and Illinois. He left by saying safety has been sacrificed for political expediency. Dr. Janice Jackson is a product of the Chicago Public Schools, Grammar School, High School, Hyde Park, University of Illinois at Chicago, and more. She grew up in the Chicago Public School system as a teacher, principal, and upper-level administrator. Her dream, she said, as a young person, was to be a leader of the Chicago Public Schools. She is dedicated to improving the trajectory for kids that have been locked out, she said. Dr. Jackson has only served 2 months in the position of chief executive officer, but she had some good news for the attendees. Chicago, she says, is an educational city on the rise, outpacing 96% of all the public school systems in the United States currently in achievement. In the ACT, Chicago Public School students are rising faster than average. The graduation rate for high school students has reached 77% and is projected to hit 85% in 2020. In the advanced placement tests called CLEP, Chicago Public Schools received a first place this year for the first time in 10 years. And in the CLEP tests, only 176 students in the world received a perfect score. 10 came from the Chicago Public Schools, 7 from Lane Tech High School up on Chicago's northwest side. The Chicago Public Schools face some serious challenges in the future, and she said these will be the next step. It's not all about rainbows and unicorns. She said we want students sooner, more pre-K, and we want to keep them longer, beyond 12th grade into the 14th grade. We want to improve access to high-quality programs such as STEM, the International Baccalaureate. We're going to bring back vocational training and expand arts and music. Career choices for youth employment. Last year, the city was only able to serve 30,000 CPS students. The goal, she said, is 60,000. Currently, there are 17 engineering firms that have adopted high schools in the city of Chicago, providing jobs and guidance for high school students. Lots of work remains to be done, she said, especially in the area of special education. These are the students that are most vulnerable. For the first time in CPS's history, a separate pot of money has been set aside for special education. Just this January, she announced the hiring of 65 new positions in the area of special ed. More changes will be coming, and she says the only way the Chicago public school system can go is upward and upward.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Mayor?
Thank you for the introduction, Jay. It is introductions like that that you wish your parents were here, because you know your mother would be proud and your father would be amazed. Now, I'm going to be exceptionally short, and I have a lot I want to say, but I'm going to leave that all to Janice, because I'm going to go from here over to Chicago Police Department headquarters to be with Superintendent Johnson, religious leaders, civic leaders, to talk about the governor's decision to veto the gun shop licensing bill. And I think in a state in which we license barbershops, we should license gun shops. In a state in which licenses cigar shops, we should license gun shops. And as somebody, I'm going to take you to synagogue next year with me. And you can do that right during the rabbi's sermon. But all of us have a responsibility when it comes to public safety. And the primary concern cannot be a primary election. It has to be the primary concern has to be our safety. And I think the governor is on the wrong side today, and he's on the wrong side of history. And we will actually deal with this issue as it relates to the safety and making sure that we have the right type of gun control in the state of Illinois. Now, with that, I say that because everything that we're doing, this is about education and making sure that our kids have a bright future. The core responsibility, and the reason the two go together, is that we do on Safe Passage or any effort, is to make sure that when our kids are going to school and going home, on their way to school and on their way from home, they can think about their studies, not their safety. And that's why what the governor did is absolutely 100% wrong for our city and for the state of Illinois. But we're here to also celebrate Janice Jackson in the journey of this city and our public schools, as noted about in Jay's introduction about somebody from Head Start. 30 years ago, she was at Cook Elementary. 30 years ago, former Secretary of Education William Bennett, Ronald Reagan's secretary, called the Chicago public school systems the worst in the United States of America. Now, if he could get through TSA, I would pay a one-way ticket for him to come back. But the good news is, in a little while, we'll have an updated airport so he can get through expeditiously. But on a serious note, he would see a school system today that, regardless of where you live, your zip code, your background, or your family's income, is beating every national norm as it relates to reading, math scores, graduation, and college attendance. And that's a visa for the entire. And this goes to all of us working together, because it also shows that when you bring the public sector, the private sector, the philanthropic community, teachers, principals, those interested in education and policy, working together over year after year, steady but sure progress, to go from the worst to now being the national gold standard, when it's reading, your eighth graders are leading the country in math gains, your fourth graders are one of the ones leading the country in reading gains, you're one of only three school systems whose fourth and eighth graders are both rising in math and reading, whose graduation rate every year for 4 years in a row rising and meeting the national standard by a multiple of three, not once, not twice, but every year. It means the hard, steady work from the home to the classroom to the principal's office, where I spent a lot of time, to all of us working and thinking about this. We are starting to see the sweat equity and the gains being made. And especially, it's more important than anything, just not only for our city, but for our kids, where that will be their visa into the 21st century. Because you live at a time where you earn what you learn. And we have to ensure that every child is prepared for that period of time post high school. Our responsibilities don't end, which is why one of the things I'm most proud about that Janice and Juan Salgado are leading the efforts is by 2019 to ensure that every child has a plan for their post high school education plan. And if we can do that, every child then will have a success. And the way I talk about this, and Janice and I often, and the whole teams when we meet, if a child from Ravenswood and a child from Roseland and a child from Englewood and a child from Edgewater look at the city and our skyline, and they see all that power and all that energy, and it's our image of our city to ourselves, and it's our image of our city to the world. If their perspective is, that's my city, regardless of Roseland or Ravenswood or Edgewater or Englewood, then I only have one word for New York, for London, for Beijing, or for Berlin. Watch out, Chicago's coming for you. But if a child's perspective in Ravenswood is different than a child's perspective in Roseland about their potential, we will never be what we can be. And so in the end of the day, the future of the city is being handled by somebody, when it comes to education, who actually grew up literally from Head Start to elementary to graduation, teacher, assistant principal, another principal, running a network, head of education, and now the CEO. The right person at the right time to write the future for the children of the city of Chicago is somebody who not only grew up, knows all the strengths, all the potential, is a living testament to what the best that Chicago has to produce. So please give a warm welcome to Janice Jackson.
Thank you, Mayor, for that warm welcome. And as usual, he said half of my speech. So I'm just going to stand here and talk to you for the next 20 minutes. So just joking. He's so proud of the progress that Chicago Public Schools is making, and I share in that honor. In Jay's introduction earlier, he mentioned my background. It's been mentioned over and over again, but I just want to take just a couple of seconds right now to really relish this moment. You heard my biography, and people hear the connections there, but I have to tell you, this is an honor. This is a dream of mine to be the leader of Chicago Public Schools. It's an honor that I don't take lightly. It's something that I have dreamt about my entire professional career, and it's not just because of the power, the prestige, and the other things that come along with that. It's because I have this desire to improve not only Chicago, but improve the trajectory for so many kids who are locked out, who have been locked out generation after generation. And so I just wanted to say thank you as, you know, residents and committed people here in the city. Thank you for your support and believing in me. And just know that you have somebody at the helm that is truly dedicated to this great work. So again, I want to thank you for coming out here today. And as many of you know, I've been on the job for a little under 2 months, but in many ways, I've been preparing for this my entire career. I remember when I was a teacher and would say to other teachers that I wanted to be the CEO of Chicago Public Schools, and many of them thought that I was crazy because, after all, when was the last time you had a person that was a teacher in the district, a student, as well as a parent leading the school system? But I'm honored because Mayor Emanuel has confidence in me and has given me this opportunity, and I'm honored that I get to serve at the pleasure of the people here in Chicago. I think public education is in my blood. And anybody who knows me, they know that this is something that I care deeply about. Whether you're a parent, a taxpayer, a teacher, or anyone connected to this great city, we all have a shared stake and a shared interest in Chicago Public Schools being the best school system in the country. It's been said over and over again about Secretary Bennett's comments about Chicago Public Schools, and I really want to move away from that. Everybody always remembers the negative. But I think that's a critical point in time because I always look back to that time as a reference point for what Chicago was to what Chicago has become. I also reflect on the year of 1995, which is when I graduated from Hyde Park, the best high school in Chicago. I know some Indians in the audience, so you all should give it up. But 1995 was also important because it was the first year that mayoral control was implemented. And I guess you could say that these two critical points have led us to where we are today. I want to thank Mayor Emanuel for his courage in the decisions that he's made in order for us to get to where we are today. I also want to thank the educators, many of whom are in the room, as well as the other civic partners that have really helped us get to where we are today. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the role that many of you have played in that, and also talk a lot about where we would like to go. I would be remiss if I did not start. I see a lot of new faces in here, and I want to make sure that everybody knows that Chicago is a district on the rise. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Stanford data that Professor Sean Reardon just shared last November that clearly showed that Chicago Public School students learn an average of 6 years in just 5 years, outpacing 96% of the school districts, public school districts throughout the country. That's an important point. They didn't say 96% of the large school systems or 96% of low-income school systems or 96% of minority, 96% of all public school systems in the country. And we know that the students who make up Chicago Public Schools do not reflect the greater demographics in this country. I also reflect on Karen Chenoweth's comments. She's a fellow at the Ed Trust, but many of you may know her. She's the premier researcher who looks for schools and districts that are beating odds. And what she said, and I'd like to quote, if we as a nation are serious about wanting to improve our schools, we should be studying how Chicago has made progress. So people nationally are talking about the work that we're doing. I can't tell you how many phone calls we field, how many visits we sponsor, because people want to know what's going on in Chicago. This is a very different school system than the school system that was referenced 30 years ago by Bill Bennett. If you look at the New York Times today, a columnist, David Brooks, just wrote about Chicago and talked about the awesome power of the school leaders, many of whom who are represented in this room today, saying once again that if you want to study a district that's on the rise, you should be studying Chicago, and all school systems would do themselves justice if they pay more attention to principal leadership, just as we have done here in Chicago. So Chicago students are outperforming their peers, not just locally, but nationally. But let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the state of Illinois. On absolute performance on standardized tests such as ACT, NAEP, and NWEA, our students continue to rise faster than the national average. Chicago students continue to drive the national average, drive the state average improvement in standardized test scores. All of this is data that's publicly available. The University of Illinois at Chicago did a study called Upstate Downstate that clearly identifies this trend. And it's not just about test scores, because I know some of you are a little skeptical about that. If you look at every single metric, every single indicator of success, CPS students are on the rise. Look at our graduation rate. The national rate is rising. Many of you know that. And it's risen about 10 points over the past 10 years. I mean, since 2002. Chicago has risen 25 points in just that same time. And the thing that gives me most pleasure is that last year, 77% of our students graduated. But that rate was driven primarily by increases, dramatic increases amongst African-American boys, with Kenwood Academy on the South Side having the highest rate of increase. But you should clap. That is an important message, because so often our youth hear so many negative messages about what they can be and what they're doing. And I really want to highlight that. And I really want to take time to highlight the young men who are sitting in front of me today from Urban Prep Academy, all African-American men who are on their way to do great things. Thank you. Thank you, William, for bringing your crew. You all know William, our honorary board student, so he brought his crew. Thank you for your support. And then recently, you may have heard that the College Board named us Advanced Placement District of the Year for the second time in 10 years since the award has been, they've been giving out this award. And they gave us this award because what they see in Chicago is nothing short of remarkable. In addition to increasing the number of students who take advanced placement tests, which is a pretty easy feat, you can get more kids in a class and ask them to sit for a test. But what they see in Chicago is not only more access and more students taking these courses and exams, but they also see simultaneously improvements in achievement. So what does that mean? It's not just about the award. More of our students are graduating with early college credentials in their back pocket, which means so much. From a financial perspective, it means they don't have to spend as much money on college. But what I know is that it gives them the confidence that they need, many of whom are first-time college-going students in their families. They need to know that they belong. They need to know that they can do it. And earning credit early in high school does just that. I would also like to acknowledge Lane Tech High School, as well as some of our other more selective schools. In the entire world, not country, the entire world, there were only 176 students who earned a perfect score on the advanced placement test. 10 of them were CPS students, you can do the math, and 7 of them attend Lane Technical High School. Again, the progress that we see, it's not just with test scores. It's not just on graduation rates and some of the other metrics. Our schools are safer now. Our out-of-school suspension rate is at an all-time low. We've cut the dropout rate since 2011, and we're on track to see an even higher freshman on-track rate for students here in Chicago. The University of Chicago showed us the power of this metric a decade ago when we as practitioners began to reorient our work around catching students early, providing them with appropriate interventions, and ensuring that they were on track towards graduation. And this wasn't just a bet or a fluke. This was driven by research. At the time, the rate was in the 50s, in the 50% range, which mirrored the graduation rate for the district around that time. Today, we're in the high 80s, which gives me great confidence that we're closing in on our goal of 85% of our students graduating by 2020. And we'll continue to track that. We'll continue to talk about it, as many of you are aware. But we're really proud of that. And I want to acknowledge the crucial role that the University of Chicago plays in that. It really is a model for how a school system should work with a research institution. We're not afraid of the data and the findings that they put out. We work collaboratively because we know the goal is always about improving student outcomes. Again, I mentioned earlier this goal of having more students obtain early college and career credentials. The goal is 50% by 2019. We're at about 43% based on last year's data, but steadily on the rise because we've put together a robust plan that not only looks at more students passing advanced placement courses or enrolling in dual language courses, but we were very specific about underrepresented students getting access to these courses. And because of that, I know we're in striking distance of that 50%. As I continue to look forward, I'm really excited about this school year because mid-year data is telling us that we are on the right path. And I want to share a little bit of that today and transition to kind of the next steps for Chicago Public Schools. So if we look at freshmen on track and sophomore on track, it's higher than it was last year at this time, which is really encouraging. We also notice that the average attendance rate is almost up one point since last school year, which is extremely important. Research is clear that if students are in school, students will learn and students will do better. And we've also seen promising numbers on our NWEA score, the metric that we use to assess school quality, and we're confident that we're going to see higher numbers of students who are proficient in math and reading at the conclusion of this school year. I know many of you may be sitting here thinking at a point here or a point there, you know, what does it all mean? That's exactly how we got to this position. People come to events like this, they want to hear about a magic potion, they want to hear about, you know, a silver bullet, and it really isn't about that. It is about years and years of reform and hard work and folks coming together and rolling up their sleeves and making incremental progress. That is how we've been able to turn this ship around and make Chicago Public Schools a district that everybody's paying attention to. But with all of that said, and many of the people in this room that have had an opportunity to work for me know that's not good enough. We still have work ahead, and we still have a lot of things that we need to do. I use a phrase sometimes with my team, they laugh at me. I say it to my daughter, which is, it's not always about rainbows and unicorns. And I tell her that because she has the pleasure of living in this world where it's all about rainbows and unicorns. I didn't grow up in that world, and I know many of you didn't. But seriously, there are going to be a few bumps in the road, and we're going to have our disagreements about how we get there. But I believe strongly that we have to push further and push harder and raise the bar. And I say that because I'm committed to this belief, and you've heard this saying before, but I really believe it. Talent is equally distributed. You have to believe that. People aren't more talented or more intelligent because they grew up on the South Side, North Side, a different part of town, in a different zip code. It's equally distributed. So what happens? Opportunity is not. And part of my role and what I'm committed to do in this role is to ensure that there are more opportunities for advancement. Because I would not be standing here today if somebody didn't see something in me and my siblings and put us in a position to get other opportunities so that I could be speaking to you here today. So my work is about closing the opportunity gap, and I believe that that's doable. But it requires collective support and effort, and it requires us to raise the bar. So you see, the progress in our schools represents the very best of Chicago and what we have to offer. But it will be all for naught if we don't ensure that every single kid, every single zip code, and every single neighborhood benefits. So let's talk about how we get there. It starts with this notion of revamping the way we think about our school system. We think about it in terms of a pre-K through 14 continuum. Think about that. Most people say K through 12. But we want students in school sooner, and we want them staying in school longer because we think that that's what it's going to take in order for them to be successful. But let's spend some time on the pre-K initiative because a lot of people, the mayor talks about that a lot. It's something we're very proud of. But I really believe that if you get students in school sooner, you can start to level the playing field. Students learn how to process information, decode information. For many of our students, that's the first time they start to acquire complex language. All of those things lead to high levels of literacy skills and thinking skills that transcend grade levels. Research is clear. Kids learn much of what they need to know for the rest of their lives between birth and five, which is why we've made a big financial commitment and increase in pre-K, and it's up more than 80% across the city. Next, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Barnett. We're also expanding access to high-quality programs. People No, educators know the value and power in having a high quality program. And we're lucky in CPS because we have a few proven models like IB, the International Baccalaureate Program, or STEM. We know that these programs are really changing the trajectory for many of our students. But I go around and I talk to a lot of parents. I do roundtables, big groups, you know, town halls. And there's one thing that I hear over and over again. They want a commitment to vocational education and career and technical education, which is why the mayor introduced the Chicago Bills construction program at Dunbar High School, which is a phenomenal high school, where we're bringing back the trades because we know for a lot of our students, this is a viable career path for them. It's also about increasing the arts. Diet High School in Grand Boulevard is a brand new arts high school. And again, the district used data in order to drive that decision. We saw that hundreds of students who live in that community were applying to art schools as far north as Sin and across the way at Curie. And we used that in order to decide where we put better programming. Because we know in order to have a set of high quality schools in every neighborhood throughout the city, we have to be strategic. We need to use data and we need to invest in programs, especially in our neighborhood schools. We need career choices for many of our students. Students are a little confused early on. They don't know exactly what they want to do. I mean, I didn't say I wanted to be a principal. I don't think anybody says that, you know, in high school. It kind of guided me that way. But early on, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And for us, I think students need formative experiences. They need access. They need to know that there are more careers out there than just a few that they may be aware of so that they can find their place. We do this by investing in youth employment. The Mayor's Summer Jobs Program right now has about 30,000 students participating, which has doubled in just a short period of time. But our goal is to get north of 60,000 because we have 60,000 youth every year who apply for these jobs. So this goes against everything we hear about youth in our city, about what they want to do. Our kids want something better, and it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure they have those opportunities. So we're expanding some of that during the school day, and I know some of our representatives are here today, many engineering firms who are supporting Chicago Public Schools. We went from 6 high schools being adopted by engineering firms to 17, and some of those people may be represented here today. We have Dyson, Siemens, Thornton Tomasetti, as well as FH Passion, who is my favorite because they're at Westinghouse. I want to give a shout out to them. But I also want to acknowledge that that is the way that we're moving. We appreciate the access to your companies and internships, but we are really looking for a commitment where you're adopting our schools and giving our students an opportunity to see the myriad of career opportunities that exist so that they can chart a path for themselves. We're continuing to raise the bar by strengthening our graduation requirements. Many of you may have missed this, but we strengthened the requirements by, number one, making it mandatory that students take 3 years of a lab science. We know that that's what's necessary in order to be prepared for college. We made the computer science for all requirement for all of our students, as well as improving our financial literacy requirement, moving away from this consumer approach and making sure our students understand all the different disciplines under finance. But the one that I'm most proud of is the Learn, Plan, and Succeed initiative, which really says that every single student will have a concrete post-secondary plan before they graduate. And this is not just about a piece of paper. This is about an opportunity. This is about a roadmap. This is about making sure that students have a pathway and they're clear about what's going to happen. Because we wrap our arms around students pre-K through 12. But for many of them, when they graduate from high school, they're left to their own devices. So we're making sure that the same thing that I know my parents did for me and many of your parents did for you, we're going to sit down with students and make sure that they have a concrete post-secondary plan upon graduation. So when I think about this pre-K through 14 continuum, I think about this not just for communities in one particular side of town. This has to happen on the north side, on the south side, on the west side, in every single corner of our city in order to reach our goals. But one area that I haven't talked a lot about is the role of parents. Parents are extremely important, and a big part of what I want to do is make information more accessible to our parents. It's no secret that we've lost population since the start of the century here in Chicago. Fewer children are being born. I got in trouble the last time I talked about that. I encourage people to go have more kids, which I'm still encouraging people to go and have more kids. Immigration has slowed. And families are leaving not just the district or the city. They're actually leaving the state. Currently, the enrollment at CPS is about at 370,000. When I was a student, we were at about 450,000. So it's dramatically different. And if we don't continue to promote the high-quality programs and school offerings that we have, we're going to lose more people. We have to make our schools more attractive to students and families, and we have to make sure that families are aware of all of their choices, and not just the people who know the system and know how to navigate. I worked at a selective enrollment school. There are some parents who can teach you a lot of stuff. But that doesn't level the playing field. So I was excited when we announced the Go CPS initiative because we took what was an opaque enrollment process that only benefited families that had resources and knew how to navigate the system and opened it up to everybody. And this past winter, 96% of the eligible students, eighth graders, completed an application online. Again, now they're more aware. They're making a choice, which I believe is extremely important. They're more aware of their options. They're making a choice, and they're participating in their child's future. And this gives me great hope that kids are going to end up in schools, number one, that they selected, and educators are going to be working with kids that chose those schools as one of their first choices. The reason this is critically important is to me, not just because of my philosophy around choice, which is important, but I talk to parents a lot, whether it's formally or informally. And I know of one parent, and I said I would share this story that we had an opportunity to talk to at a roundtable a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things she said to me, and this really goes against what people think, that parents are really discerning. And she explained that she has three children and that they go to three different school CPS schools. And that every single day she gets up and she drives her kids to three different schools. And she does that because she wants something better for her children. But can you imagine the toll that that takes on a family if every single day, first of all of your kids aren't in the same school and they're traveling all over the city. So it's stories like that that motivate me every day. It's stories like that that make me wonder, why can't we have a high quality school in every single community so parents don't have to travel all over the city to make it happen? It also, they also need access to high quality teaching. It's not just about the school. It's not just about what level the school is. It's unfortunate that we still have a discrepancy. There are some schools, I think it's unfortunate and unfair, where they don't have the top talent. They don't have the top teachers. And one of the things that we've done as a district to support them is that we identified the 50 schools in the most underserved communities. Most of these schools are on the south and the west side, as you might imagine. And our goal is to support them to attract and retain great teachers. So many of these schools are the schools where there may not be a teacher on the first day. So the district is hiring teachers early, teachers that have committed to working in these schools. We call them opportunity schools, again, bridging that opportunity gap. And they have agreed to work in any one of these 50 schools, and we've provided them with early offers so that those kids, just like my kids, just like everyone's kid in this room, walks into a classroom on the first day and has a certified, competent teacher standing in front of them who's ready to support them. And we all know we can't do this without adequate funding. The mayor left early, but I think he deserves another ovation for the work that he did in Springfield to get us $450 million additional dollars for our school. Although our work in finances isn't done, it's much more stable than it was in the past, and it gives a degree of certainty that really a lot of our principals and families haven't had, and I think it's critically important. One of the things that I did, one of the first policy changes with regard to budget that I've enacted, is to stop this fall adjustment funding that we would, I'm sorry, stop the adjustment of funding in the fall, which is something we used to do. This was a disruptive practice where we would look at 20th day enrollment in the fall and make adjustments based on enrollment. We changed this year, and principals, I mean, you probably heard it throughout Twitter and throughout the city and through your LSEs, hopefully, but principals were really excited about this change. They have more certainty, and for you, this may sound like a technical fix or a policy, right? But what this means is that now kids will know who their teacher is going to be in the fall. That may sound like a little thing to you. But that's the way it's supposed to be. And for many of our schools, we weren't able to guarantee that because there was so much uncertainty. But those days are gone, and we're on a stronger footing now. The last thing I'll say around that transition is that we have a lot of work to do with regard to special education. And it's directly tied to funding, as many of you will imagine. We've heard a lot of concerns from parents, and I understand why. Students with special needs are our most vulnerable students, and like the old adage says, you can learn a lot about where your values are based on how you treat your most vulnerable people. The district made a lot of changes. Some of them I agreed with, some of them we learned from. But we made these changes in an attempt to make sure the students were getting what they needed, because we were spending a lot of money but not seeing the outcomes that we wanted for those students. But some of it was too fast, and we had to walk it back. And that's never a recipe for success. But we've been going community by community, school by school, talking to parents, and we made a lot of important changes as a result of that. One of those changes was to move away from financing special education in a way that was less clear. So we have a separate pot where it's clearly transparent how we're funding special education, and we've heard from many principals as well as parents that that is the support that they were looking for. In addition to that, we've always funded every single IEP, but we've heard over and over again that there were additional supports that were needed. That's why in January we introduced 65 new positions to support many of our schools, supporting students who are both special education students and English language learners, supporting students in some of our toughest schools where they needed behavioral support and additional social workers. So I'm excited about the progress and the direction that we're going in, but still acknowledging that there's more work that needs to be done. I want to be clear, and I say this all the time, I don't think we ever had a glory days of special education, but I think we can get close to that. But there is no silver bullet for making our special education system the best in the country. It's going to require the same kind of work that I talked about earlier, step by step, school by school, and point by point in order to get it back to where it needs to be. I want to close by saying there's a tendency for people in this position to stand up in forums like this and outline kind of a big, bold plan that gets everybody excited and promises to solve all of the problems that we face as a school district. I've seen it over and over again, and oftentimes they disappoint. That's not what you're going to get from me. That's not part of my leadership. My leadership is about really being grounded in the work and making the change over time, working alongside the people in this room and the educators in Chicago Public Schools. But I do want to acknowledge that there have been a few things that have really worked, and I want to double down on these things during my administration. And I also want to give a call to action to many of you in the room who have already been great partners in this work, but there may be others of you who are kind of sitting on the sidelines and peeking in and wondering about what's happening in CPS, wondering about how you can be supportive. I want to tell you a few of the things that we think have worked. First, I talked about this earlier, the use of data and our partnership with the University of Chicago. That use of data has led to greater accountability as a district, and I believe we're better as a result. Second, and I've talked a lot about this today, I want to recognize mayoral courage. It takes a lot to stand up and change a system that has been in existence for a long period of time. And if it were not for that leadership, a lot of the reforms that we've talked about today and that the district has benefited from would not have happened if it wasn't for the mayor pushing hard for change. The other piece I want to talk about is school leadership. And again, you saw the column today, but principals really do make a huge difference. And I want to continue doing the work like the work we're doing at the Chicago Public Education Fund, along with so many other partners in this room, because we have seen Chicago stands out with having an 85% retention rate, which still isn't, you know, perfect, but it's much better than a lot of urban school districts. And it's because of the great work that we're doing in partnership with the fund and our principals. The last thing I'll say is that innovation, innovation, innovation. We have to create more public and private partnerships, like the partnership with the fund, like our partnership with Ingenuity. Just to give you a quick statistic about how you can change something in a short period of time. When we started working with Ingenuity, less than 40% of our schools had access to a high-quality arts program. Now we're north of that at 66%. I wanted to make sure I had the exact amount, and that's because of concerted effort, public-private partnership, and really bringing together folks who are interested in changing and righting a wrong for our students. Now more than 60% of our kids have over the required amount of minutes in arts per week, which is at 120 minutes. And it's because of that and because of those types of partnerships, our district is stronger than ever. We have some of the best charter schools in the country, and we want to continue to work with the models that we believe are effective, which is why we changed the charter quality policy. And I believe that there's a lot of work and a lot of innovation happening in this district, and I want to ask you to be a part of that, to be a part of that change, because Chicago Public Schools is truly a district on the rise, and I want to thank you for your time and thank you for listening to me, and I'm going to turn it over and take a few questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Jackson. We have time for a few questions. And then we'll have our drawing. And, okay, so the first question I have here is from City Club member Robert Manowith. Will you lobby the General Assembly now and whoever is governor next year for a constitutional amendment for a graduated income tax with a specific percentage of new revenue? He said K to 12, but you would say K to 14 education.
K to 14. I will say I will work along with the General Assembly and anybody else who's working towards getting additional funding for our schools. Look, as I stated in my comments, we received an additional $450 million because of that support, and we'll continue to lobby for additional funding for CPS. But I'm not a politician. I'm an educator, so it's not my job to put together, you know, the that platform. My goal is to make sure people understand that Chicago is a district worth fighting for. I personally, as a resident here in Illinois and also as a leader of CPS, would like to see the state of Illinois not be dead last for funding public education for our most vulnerable students. That's what I'm going to lobby for.
Thank you. This is from Pastor Randall Blakey with the Jennifer Ogden Steering Committee. Over there. How can the success of the Jenner-Ogden merger become best practices for CPS to address educational inequities?
Thank you, Pastor Blakey. Actually, you guys are a model, and I apologize for not acknowledging that earlier, especially when I was talking about school enrollment and our approach going neighborhood by neighborhood. If you look at what happened with the Ogden-Jenner merger, it's a blueprint for how we should work with communities. I actually think it's also a call for more support for some of our underrepresented communities. You guys had the blessing of having a lot of resources, a lot of parents at the table who could help drive and move this work, but unfortunately, there are a lot of our communities who don't have as much support as we've experienced. So I would like to work collaboratively with the community as much as possible. And we also need support from many of our communities who need people to help put proposals together, people to help them unpack all this complex data. So I think it's a model for what we want to do. And at the end of the day, it's the right way to do it. It was smooth, which is what we always want. And it was smooth because it was a community-generated proposal, and it was what we had an opportunity to listen to the community, and that's a part of my leadership model.
Thank you. Thank you. This is from Kathy Miller. Kathy, where are you?
Right here.
Right here. Kathy, you didn't check whether you're a member or not, but we're going to answer the question anyhow. If you're not a member, this is it. You get one freebie. Okay? She's with the Constitutional Rights Foundation in Chicago. Could you speak to student civic engagement, particularly public protest and empowering student voices? And I guess in a way this ties into tomorrow where a number of schools, and so go ahead. It's all yours, Doctor.
All right. Thank you. Actually, that's a great question. If you look at our vision for Chicago Public Schools, we've done a lot of work around civic engagement and developing student voice. One of our goals is to have a student voice committee at every single high school. We're closing in on that, but also expanding that to elementary school. Elementary school students can, you know, lobby or they could, you know, speak on behalf and really talk about what they want. And we haven't seen a lot of that in our elementary school, so it's a big part of our planning. The other piece with regard to the protest tomorrow, I've made it clear that I think it's an important point in time in our history. And we are supporting our students and educators who want to participate in the walkout tomorrow. Thank you. And you know, we're going to allow them to participate. There won't be any discipline, which, you know, sometimes can come along with a student protest and walk out. The goal is to be safe, but to also make sure that their voices are heard.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. This is from Dan Rifkin, who's with Johnson Controls. Oh, look at all these questions. We're never, we'll be. Okay. One of those 17 engineering firms mm-hmm. that you mentioned.
Yep.
What's the plan to expand selective enrollment schools?
Yeah. I think our plan is around, as I stated in the speech, is around expanding opportunities in general. The University of Chicago put out a report a few years ago that showed that many students do well in our IB programs. So it's not just about selective enrollment. We have some of the best schools and best programs in the country, but I really want to make sure we open everybody's eyes to the fact that there are a lot of high-quality programs beyond selective enrollment schools in Chicago. It's not just about those 11 schools. We have some amazing schools that have high-quality programs that are really sending a lot of children off to college. So our goal is to expand high quality programs, and I'm not committed to just one program. I'm really committed to a program that changes the trajectory for students, and we get that with IB, we get that with STEM, we get that with some of our other school models that are currently working for children.
Great. We have some really good questions up here, so I'll try to combine a few if I can. This is from Harvind Singh and Sashi Singh. I don't know if they're sing together, but I know, pretty bad. Anyhow, Harvind wants to know, how do we get away from the property tax formula for funding schools? And Sashi Singh has a very interesting question here. Do you ever discuss the possibility of students to have the ability to select teachers for their classes, which happens at the college and university level?
So I was reading the question over his shoulder and started laughing before he even got it out. I think we've done a lot around teacher quality and improving teacher evaluation systems. I think that, you know, student choice, it matters. But I also think, you know, it's a school system. It's hard enough to put a program together to lay on that layer of complexity. But I also know that it's common practice. Most good teachers and students in here can attest to that. They have their students do a survey, you know, at the end of the year and use that to improve practice anyway. So I don't think it's a bad idea, but I'm not prepared to say that it's going to be a district-wide policy anytime soon. And I think the question about funding we talked about earlier, again, I would just, you know, apply that answer from earlier. I mean, we know that we need more funding for our schools. I want to get to a point where principals aren't choosing against an extracurricular program or an academic program. They're not choosing between art and world language. We're not there yet. So anything that brings more funding into Chicago public schools and other school districts throughout the state that are in need of additional funding, I will support.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, these are two questions from faculty administrators at DePaul University. One from Lynn Narasimhan. I'm sorry if I butchered your name. What support can university partners provide to retain teacher readers in the Chicago public school system? And the other question is, there's been a tremendous decline in students enrolled at the master's level in education. What can be done to inspire more individuals, and what can be done to encourage more males of color to pursue a teaching career?
Thank you, because I could do a whole speech on that. So a few things. One, we know that there is a crisis nationally with regard to teachers, in particular teachers of color. So that's an initiative that's important to the district. And in the coming months, you'll be hearing more about our diversity and quality programs that we have underway. But it requires us to work directly with local universities like DePaul, but as well as looking, you know, throughout the Midwest and other places that import a lot of teachers into Chicago. We need more teachers in general, but we also need more teachers of color. Again, research is clear that students are inspired when they see individuals who look like them teaching, but we also know, which is an extremely important point, that your students are more likely to be identified as gifted and talented if the teacher is of the same race. So that's critically important, and it's something that I pay a lot of attention to. So you'll hear more about that because we are working on a few policy solutions and changes that we have underway. What I will will say to local universities is to continue to help us with our Grow Your Own initiatives. One of the plans that we have underway is to create career and technical programming for students interested in becoming teachers. The goal is to open that in conjunction with our partners at CTU, to open that at some of our high schools so that we can start developing people who want to be teachers early on. And then the final piece around the Grow Your Own initiative is that this year we've started with a cohort of about 40 individuals who are currently employed with the district, many of whom are teacher's assistants that have a degree, helping them get an alternative certification so that they can teach in some of our high needs areas. So if universities want to sit down with us and talk about how to put some of those plans in place, how to support people who want to be career changers and become teachers, I would love to have that conversation with the folks at DePaul and any other university partners in the room.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jackson. We just have two more questions. Ellie Foreman. Ellie, where are you? Right there, over there. Community Relations for Mesro Financial. She wants to go back and talk to those folks and ask them to contribute more money to the Chicago Public Schools. So her question is, could you talk a little bit more about the roles of corporations and businesses in the success of CPS schools? Yeah.
If you hear me speak, I talk a lot about the ecosystem, and when I talk to other superintendents, I brag about the ecosystem here in Chicago. I think we have a strong partnership with the philanthropic community, with the university community, and with our corporate community, but that is an area of focus. As I stated in my remarks, and the mayor has said over and over again, we would like to see more corporations adopting and working directly with our schools. We appreciate a lot of the programming that currently exists that gives our students exposure, but we believe that we have to go deep. And we've started with, just like the program I talked about with FH Passion, there are so many others, Northwestern. They're doing deep and giving kids enriching experiences that is really changing their trajectory, and I'd like to see more programs like that. You know, we can always use additional financial support to support some of the initiatives that we know work, things like the work that we're doing with principals, post-secondary work we're doing in Chicago is really encouraging, the work that we're doing around social-emotional learning. So there are other programs that people can invest in, but I really think the partnership and access to the professionals in your organization is the strongest way and the best way to support our kids.
Great. And then the final question here is really my question, and I just wanted to throw this out. You talked about the charter schools and that. Could you comment on the relationship currently with the Chicago Teachers Union? And second question, has there been, we assume that when Arne Duncan was the Secretary of Education, whoever was running the schools picked up the phone and got a hold of Mr. Duncan. Has there been any communication, to the best of your knowledge, with the current Secretary of Education, Mrs. DeVos?
Thanks for that one.
So, no to the last question, okay. But I'm open to it. You know, I say this all the time. I will talk to anybody who is interested in making our schools better, so not closed off in that regard. Our relationship with the CTU, I believe, is a relationship that is strong. I say this over and over again, and I believe it. You, in order to be a successful superintendent, which I see myself as a school superintendent, you have to work in conjunction with the leadership of the CTU. I also think it's critically important that we work in collaboration on how we improve this district and various policy solutions. The policy solution, it has to be more than just the opposite of what the district is saying. And so I'm very committed. We have a good line of communication, and I will continue to have that line of communication there because I believe our schools are better as a result of it, and our kids are better. At the end of the day, and you know this from my background, I am a teacher. I taught. So I believe that teachers are the bedrock of Chicago Public Schools, and all the gains that we're touting here today, we could not talk about those gains if we were not walking arm in arm with the teachers here in Chicago Public Schools. And they work extremely hard. It is a difficult job, but it's also a very rewarding job. And I think it's an awesome place to be for any teacher because CPS is on the rise, and who doesn't want to be a part of a winning team?
And you heard that from a Hyde Park colonel.